PowerPoint. I have a blackboard as my backdrop of my PowerPoint here. Okay, so we're going to have a little talk here on the physics and the mathematics of spin. So just as a bit of an introduction here, historical introduction. So it turns out that there were two main guys involved with this. That's Otto Stern and Gerlach, or Walter Gerlach. And this experiment was done in the 1920s. And Simone mentioned this experiment very, very briefly, called the Stern-Gerlach experiment. And so this is a great opportunity to sort of expand on that and give you a sense of what this super important experiment was all about and what it told us about the nature of spinning particles. So I just put here, it's the wrong theory but the right experiment. So in these people's minds here, what was in that guy's head and that guy's head at this time was Bohr's model of the atom. Okay? And so what they were imagining is the electron is going around the nucleus of the atom like in a Rutherford kind of a picture, and that has some kind of angular momentum, and maybe that angular momentum is then quantized, and so on and so forth. So they measured this quantization of angular momentum, as we're going to see. They actually found that to be the case, but they weren't measuring this orbital kind of angular momentum. You know, the angular momentum associated with, say, a planet going around the sun or an electron orbiting around the nucleus of an atom. They were measuring actually the angular momentum of the electron itself spinning on its own axis. Okay? And so they didn't know that at the time. And they only discovered that what they were measuring was the electron spin some years later. Okay, so anyways, so those are the two people involved. And there's a really fascinating history here. I could tell you all kinds of stuff, but we're running short of time. And so I would just say, you know, Google Stern-Gerlach experiment. You'll find all kinds of fun history here. Basically, for example, one of the results was they had this plate. And these electrons were hitting this plate. And they looked at the result, and there was nothing there. So it turns out that either Stern or Gerlach, I can't remember which one, was smoking a cigar, and he just blew on the thing. Or the story is he just had cigar breath, and they were breathing on it while they were talking, and then the sulfur in these bad cigar fumes were basically photographically developing the silver atoms, and so in fact this, whatever stuff like that. It's all loaded with stuff like that. So interesting kind of history. Yeah. Oh, there's the cigar. Okay, there we go. Thank you. Okay, so let's get on to the physics behind their experiment here. Okay, so what we've got in this picture here, there's an oven. Okay, so what we do is we take silver and we heat this guy up until it vaporizes. Just like when you heat water up, it vaporizes and you get water vapor. Well, here we get silver vapor. Okay, so silver atoms, and they come flying out of this hole here. And at some speed, and we collimate the beam by putting it through a series of small holes, and so we get a beam of silver atoms flying out. Okay, so that's the first thing. Okay, and this beam of atoms is then directed into, or I should say, first of all, unbeknownst to Stern and Gerlach at the time, what's actually relevant here is that each silver atom has sort of an extra electron in one of the outside orbitals, and we are interested in the spin of this extra electron. And we'll understand spin much more as we go along. But it's actually the electron in the silver atom that we're interested in. Okay, so think of the electron spinning just like a classical top. A spinning top, and we'll see how it's a little bit different, actually quite a bit different as we go along. But for now, we just think of it as a spinning top, and so the spin direction of that extra electron in that silver atom can be pointing in a totally random direction. Okay, so here's the first atom that comes out, and the spin is pointing downwards, so it's spinning, the spin axis is pointing downwards. The next one comes out, and the spin axis is pointed away from you, and the third one comes out, and the spin axis is basically up but tilted a bit left, and so on. So these spin axes come out in a totally random fashion. Okay, so then what we do is we take that beam of randomly oriented spinning particles, and we pass it through this Stern-Gerlach apparatus. And for the time being, we'll just think of it as this black box. It's a black box in which particles enter a hole at the back, and they leave a hole at the front. And something happens in between that we'll talk about a little bit later. Okay, and there's some orientation for this apparatus. We're showing it that it's pointing up. Oriented up, okay, and so something happens to these atoms, as they pass through the Stern-Gerlach apparatus, and they hit a detection screen. Okay? And say if there's no deflection, if they just go straight through, they'll hit the detection screen at that spot over there. But it will also it can also happen that this beam is deflected. Okay, so here's an example of a deflected. It's the path of the atom is deflected upwards. Okay, and in general, we're going to consider all kinds of different possible deflections of these atoms along this line. Okay, from between undeflected and maximally deflected, up and down. Okay, so that's the basic setup. Okay, so the first thing we want to do is we want to look at a silver atom in a little bit more detail, and then we're going to look at what's inside this Stern-Gerlach apparatus. Okay, so let's look at a silver atom first. So here's a silver atom, and that silver atom has this electron in it, which is whose spin axis is in the direction of the red arrow here. Okay, and what we can think of as sort of a first sort of classical model of that spinning electron, we can think of it as a tiny spinning bar magnet. Okay, so an electron has two main properties. First of all, it has an electric charge, okay, which we're all familiar with, that produces static electric forces and all that. But each electron also behaves like a tiny bar magnet. Okay, and that bar magnet is, in fact, spinning. So it's like just a spinning north-south bar magnet like this. So that's how we're going to think of the electron inside that silver atom. Okay, just a classical picture. Okay, so next let's look at what's inside this mysterious Stern-Gerlach apparatus. Okay, so what do we got here? So this thing is basically a simple north-south magnet. Okay, so it's really just, you know, it's like a horseshoe magnet like this, you know, with north up here and south down here, and the electron, or the silver atoms pass through in this direction here. Okay, so that's one feature. There is a magnetic field that the electrons in those atoms are passing through. Okay, and there's an important subtlety here, and that is that it's a non-uniform magnetic field. Okay, so if I just take an ordinary horseshoe magnet like this, the field between the North Pole and the South Pole will be uniform. So it'll be the same strength everywhere in the space between those poles. Okay, what we're doing is we basically grind down the shape of the North and South Pole in these clever ways so that, in fact, what ends up happening is the space between the North and South Pole, yes, the magnetic field is down, but it changes strength. Okay, it might be weaker up here and stronger down here or vice versa. So it's a non-uniform magnetic field, and that plays a very important role. Okay, so we got this magnetic field that's stronger at the top and weaker at the bottom or vice versa. Okay, now before we get to the non-uniform aspect of it, let's just consider the simplest possible case of a uniform magnetic field between just a north pole and a south pole. Now the idea is we've got this this electron in this silver atom, which we're thinking of as this spinning bar magnet, and this spinning bar magnet is going to enter this region that has a magnetic field. Okay, can anyone tell me what's going to happen to that spinning bar magnet as it flies through here? It's going to what?
Rotate.
It's going to rotate. Okay. So let's suppose. Actually, let me ask a simpler question to begin with. Suppose that this bar magnet were not spinning. Suppose we just took a bar magnet here and put it in a uniform magnetic field like this. What is the effect of this magnetic field on this magnet? It wants to flip it, right? So basically, we've got a north pole over there, close to a north pole over there. So these two guys are going to repel each other. And similarly, we've got a south pole next to a south pole over here, and those are going to repel each other. And so there's going to be a twisting kind of force, a torque acting on that. Okay, so, hitting the wrong button. So there's a torque, a twisting force. Okay, so if this magnet were not spinning and it was subjected to this twisting force, what's going to happen to the magnet? It's just going to turn. It's going to turn so the north pole is down and the south pole is up. So that little magnet is going to align with the field. Okay, but now there's a very important feature here. This magnet is in fact spinning. If we add spin to this, and now consider the same question, what's going to happen to that bar magnet, that spinning bar magnet, when we put it in this negative field? Is it still going to rotate like this? It's going to what? It's going to precess. Okay, so let me give you an example of precession, which you are all familiar with, that's completely analogous to this. So if we have a spinning top, okay, so a spinning top is, maybe it looks something like this. So this is just an ordinary top like this, and this guy is spinning around like this, and the tip of the top is on the surface of the Earth here. Okay. If the top is not spinning, and we just set it up like this, then there's the pivot point. Earth's gravitational field is pulling down on the center of gravity point here, and it's really exerting a twisting force, a torque, tending to rotate this guy, and so this guy's just going to topple over. Right? Okay, but if this guy is spinning, okay, then we know through the magic of Newton's laws applied to rotating objects. How many of you have done that in school? Okay, so what happens here? We know through the magic of that in fact it doesn't just tip over. What happens is it precesses. Okay, so the axis of rotation, which is like this, turns around in space. Okay, so it doesn't just fall over. And I have a really, really great demo of this. This is okay, great demo. Let me just put this thing up. So this is our spinning top. So there's a heavy disk here, which we can make rotate. I'm going to hook up this little motor to it, which is going to make it spin really fast. Okay, so let me just get that on there. Okay, and I'll just, whoa. I'm not supposed to speak like that. I must be doing something wrong. Okay, so we'll spin this guy up. This is a beautiful thing. It's really spinning fast. Spinning faster and faster and faster. Okay, so it's really, really whipping around here. And there's quite a bit of mass here. So there's quite a bit of angular momentum in this thing. Okay, so, okay, that's good enough. Let's try it now. Okay, so there's lots of angular momentum in this thing. And so this is my spinning top, and this is the point at which it's going to pivot around. So let me just stick it on there and let it go. Okay, and you see that it doesn't just fall over. Okay, it precesses around. So the direction of its spin axis just moves around on the surface of a cone like this. Okay? So that's a very, very important property of spinning objects. And that's what's happening here. We have a spinning object. We are exerting a torque on it like this, tending to topple it over, but it's not going to topple over. Instead, what it's going to do is it's simply going to precess about the vertical axis, the axis of the magnetic field. Okay, so if I start with this spinning bar magnet with its spin axis oriented that way, as in this picture, and it enters the region of the magnetic field, as it's flying through the magnetic field, during the time that it's spending time in that magnetic field, it's going to be precessing like this, around and around and around, and then when it comes out the other side, it will have precessed to some other direction. Okay, so you can see that in this picture here. Okay, so it has precessed. Okay, this is getting pretty low. If there were no friction in that little joint there, and there were no slowing down due to air resistance and all that stuff, that thing would just precess forever, exactly on that original cone. But we're sort of slowing down here. But it's still precessing nearly horizontal. This is a really beautiful thing. Okay, there we go. Let me just stick that over there. All right. Right. Okay, so that's the first thing. Now the next thing is, so far we've discussed what happens to a spinning bar magnet as it passes through a uniform magnetic field. What happens if we make the magnetic field non-uniform, which is the key feature of the Stern-Gerlach apparatus? Okay, so let's see. So what we're going to do is we're going to make the magnetic field weaker at the top here and stronger at the bottom. Okay? And we're going to pass this guy through. So what do you think is going to happen as it passes through? Okay, so here we've got, so I'll just indicate it this way. So the repelling force between that north pole and that north pole, because the magnetic field is weaker up here than it is down here, that repelling force will be weaker here than the repelling force between that south pole and that south pole. Okay, so there's going to be a precession, sure, just as before, but there's less of a downward force here and more of an upward force, so there's a net force in what direction? So what's going to happen when it passes through here? It's going to be deflected upwards, okay? So let's see that. So basically, it gets deflected up, okay? So basically, there are two things going on. One is a precession. It ends up pointing in a different direction on that cone, okay? But also, it gets deflected. And we're mainly interested in the deflection. Okay, so that's the basic physics behind that black box, that Stern-Gerlach apparatus. Okay, and Stern and Gerlach, of course, knew all of this, and they were trying to take advantage of that deflection effect and see what happens. Okay, so let's take another example here. So suppose that, so we've got this non-uniform magnetic field inside here, and when we fire in an atom, which has this electron, which is spinning, say, in the horizontal direction, okay, as it passes through, what's going to happen? Okay, so there's going to be this horizontal precession like this, exactly like this horizontal precession of that gyroscope. Okay, is there going to be any deflection? Okay, there's going to be no deflection because, okay, so we got this torque, sure. So that north pole repels that north pole, that south pole repels that south pole, and there's that torque. So we're going to get this precession. But even though the magnetic field is non-uniform, there's not going to be any deflection because this south and this north pole are at the same level, okay? And so they feel the same strength of the magnetic field. So the repulsive force between that north pole and that north pole is exactly as strong as the repulsive force between those two south poles. Okay, and so no deflection. All right, but there is some precession. Okay, so we're going to do a couple of three experiments here, and we're going to carefully think about the results of these experiments and deduce something about the nature of spin, which is really, really quite remarkable. Okay, so here we go. So the first experiment, we just have our oven emitting all of these silver atoms, and the direction of the spin of the of that extra electron in all of the silver atoms is totally random. Okay, so it comes out totally random, and we fire that beam of randomly oriented atoms through this Stern-Gerlach apparatus. And it hits the screen over here. So here comes the first atom. And suppose that the first atom is pointing pointing in the up direction. Okay, as it passes through, is it going to be deflected? And in what direction? So when this atom here that's spinning in the up direction passes through, are we going to get deflection? So remember, inside here, we've got that north-south magnet that's non-uniform. Okay, if it comes in spinning upwards, how many say yes? Okay, so yeah, so there's going to be a deflection. Okay, and it's going to be deflected in the upward direction. Okay, and so let's think about, say, the next one. The next one coming through is, say, spin down. If that one, if the axis of the spin is downwards, then there's going to be precession as well as deflection. Okay, and that deflection is going to be down. Okay, and if we consider, say, let's look at a third example here. Suppose that the spin is coming straight out at you. So I just have some axes here. So this is z up, y is in the forward direction, and x is coming out at you. So if the spin is coming straight out at you, is there going to be deflection? So how many say, yes, there will be a deflection? In which direction? So this is the same as what we considered in the previous one. Basically, it's coming, we've got this bar magnet, which is horizontal. And it passes through. And because both the north and south poles are at the same level, they feel the same strength of magnetic field. And so there will be no deflection. Okay, so now here's the thing. This is very important here. So because the direction of spin is totally random, okay, it can be anything from the extreme case of pointing upwards, in which case we have maximum deflection upwards, or the spin pointing downwards, in which case we have maximum deflection downwards. Because the spins are oriented randomly, we're basically going to get everything in between. Okay, so what Stern and Gerlach,
if classical mechanics were true, if our world was governed by Newton's laws and so on, then we would expect this sort of thing. We would expect that electrons, these atoms, would hit the screen basically anywhere here with equal likelihood. Okay, so we'd see a big smear of hits on the screen. That's what we expect to see. Does anyone know what we actually see when we do this experiment? Right, so we see only two dots. This is what we actually see. Look at the difference between what we expect to see and what we actually see. Okay, all of those possibilities in between have simply disappeared, and there are only two possibilities. We see only a spot here and only a spot there. Okay, so right away we recognize that something bizarre is going on. Something very different from a Newtonian worldview is happening here. Okay, and so it's our job now to figure out, based upon this experiment and some others, what is going on, and to construct some kind of mathematics behind that, okay, which is going to allow us to understand the bizarre nature of spin. Okay, so the upshot of this slide here is that this result of this experiment we simply can't explain using Newton's laws. We need something we need something different. Okay, it has no common sense explanation. Okay, it has a quantum explanation, of course. Okay, so experiment number two. Experiment number two is, okay, we start with the same oven here, and we have this beam of atoms coming out, and the spin of each atom that's coming out is totally random, could be in any direction. Okay, and we fire it through a Stern-Gerlach apparatus, which is oriented up-down. Okay, so the magnetic field is up-down like this. All right? So the result of our first experiment was that, that 50% of those atoms went in the upper beam and 50% went in the lower beam. Okay, so now here's a question. Suppose that we stick another Stern-Gerlach apparatus oriented in the same direction in the path of the upper beam. Okay, what's going to come out here? Is there going to be deflection? If yes, in which direction? Is there deflection? How many say yes, deflection? Which direction? Down? Up. Okay, so we would expect that what comes out here is up. Okay, and in fact, that's what we observe. Okay, so every single atom in this up beam here, okay, when it passes through the second Stern-Gerlach apparatus, none of them get deflected down, and all of them get deflected up. Okay, and similarly for down here. Okay, so we stick another Stern-Gerlach, also oriented up and down. Okay, and what comes out is none come out in the upper beam, all of them come out in the lower beam. Okay, so that's kind of obvious, but that's, you know, we have to check these things. Okay, so what we say here, it's we're going to come up with an hypothesis, okay, and then we're going to use that hypothesis to go further. Okay, so our basic hypothesis is that all of the atoms in this beam over here are spin up. Okay, so they're all in this state here. Okay, now remember, we're actually saying something radical here in a sense, because what's happening here is the atoms that are in the original beam can be oriented in totally arbitrary directions, totally random directions. But what we're saying is the effect of this Stern-Gerlach apparatus is to take all those random orientations and basically force them into two possibilities, either of this type spinning straight up, or of the other type spinning all the way down. Okay, and so we'll call these spin up and spin down. Okay, so that's the result of experiment number two, and that's our hypothesis here. Is that, am I clear on this? And should we go on? All this clear? All right. Okay, so that's our working hypothesis. Now let's go on to experiment number three, in which we start with our little oven of atoms again. And they come out. Let me remind you that they come out, and the spin direction is totally random. Okay, and we fire it through a Stern-Gerlach apparatus, but different from before. Instead of being up down or in the z direction here, we have it horizontal. We have it coming out of the page. It's in the x direction. That's the orientation. So let me ask you, what's going to come out here? Can someone answer? What do you think is going to come out? Yeah.
So we're going to see them now that the apparatus, the Stern-Gerlach, is pointing towards you.
the beam is going in like this, and instead of seeing the beam fan out in two up and down, we're going to see the beam fan out horizontally. So there's going to be one going to the left and one going to the right. Okay, so that's what we see. Okay, so 50% of those atoms will be directed. Oops, 50% of those atoms will be directed into the left beam and 15 to the right. And according to our hypothesis, what we are saying then is the atoms which are directed into the left beam or to the right beam here are their axis of spin is pointed toward you. Okay, and the atoms in the beam that's going away from you, their spin is directed away from you. Okay, so now comes the next question. What if we now take one of these atoms, which is whose spin direction is toward us, whose spin direction is horizontal? It's like this. It's spinning like this. So its spin axis is this way. And we put it into a second Stern-Gerlach apparatus, which is oriented vertically. What's going to come out here? It'll be what? So what we do know is that for all of these Stern-Gerlach apparatuses, there's always two beams, okay? Either something up or something down along the axis of the apparatus. So the question is basically, so we know what's going to come out here is two beams, one up and one down. And the question is, what percentage of the atoms that come in are going to go into the upper beam, and what percentage are going to go into the lower beam? They're going to be what? Okay, so they're going to come out straight like that, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay, but we already know that in any one of these Stern-Gerlach apparatuses, it always gets split just into two beams. That center one is missing. Okay, so it's going to be 50-50. All right? So it's going to be 50-50 up or down. Okay, and similarly, if we do it here. Okay, so this is exactly the case that we had before. We had a case where a horizontal horizontally spinning atom enters a Stern-Gerlach up and down, and it's neither up nor is it down, it's horizontal. And so it gets split 50-50, 50% up, 50% down. Okay, so that's all that's happening here. Okay. So we got that, and so atoms here. So one thing I was curious about this: atoms here that enter spinning horizontally, half of them will go up and half of them will go down. There's no preference. Nature has no preference for which. Suppose that these are all exactly horizontal. Okay? There's no way that nature could choose between up or down. So it does so perfectly randomly. Okay, so one of them goes through, and nature chooses perfectly randomly to put it into the upper beam. Another, the next one comes through, and nature chooses perfectly randomly to put it into the next into the lower beam, and so on. Okay, so basically, a horizontal atom has a 50-50 chance of emerging spin up or spin down. So this whole idea of chance enters at this point. Okay, there's a fundamental probabilistic nature to our universe. Okay, so here's a summary of what we've discovered so far with these experiments. Yeah.
Could you go back to the last slide for 1 second?
Yes. Okay. So what we're doing is we're doing a number of simple experiments, looking at the results, and we're going to build a picture in our mind of the nature of spin, and you're going to see that indeed it's an extremely quirky object. An electron, now in your mind you might have the electron as this, a model of an electron as this sort of like spinning top here, but it's actually, I mean, some of those features are true, but it's actually quite much more bizarre than that. Okay, so we've got so suppose we start with atoms that are whose spin direction is up. Okay, if we put this into a Stern-Gerlach apparatus whose magnetic field points up and down, then the result is we get 100% of those atoms go into the upper beam and none go into the lower beam. Okay, they're all deflected up, none of them are deflected down. Okay, so that's obvious. Okay, and similarly for down, if we start with an atom pointing down, spinning down, we pass it through our Stern-Gerlach and all of them will end in the lower beam and none of them will end up in the upper beam. Okay, so that's one result. Second result, which is also very important for us, is if the atom comes in and the electron is spinning in the direction facing you guys horizontally, okay, and we feed that into a Stern-Gerlach pointed oriented vertically, we're going to find 50-50. Okay, it will come out, spin up or spin down totally randomly. Okay, so the first thing is the two basic properties emerge here. One is quantization of spin direction. Okay, so so this is very important. So from our very first experiment, what we might have expected is electrons to be hitting the screen basically everywhere along this line, from the maximum up deflection to maximum down. But we found that in any Stern-Gerlach apparatus, no matter how it's oriented, no matter how you're, no matter what kinds of atoms are coming in, the beam of atoms is always split into exactly two. Okay? So there's a quantization of spin direction. Okay? And we call that spin up or spin down, where up and down are relative to that orientation. Okay? So we got that. And the second thing we notice is that probability plays a fundamental role. Okay? So this guy that's spinning horizontally, okay, basically it can't decide. The Stern-Gerlach is going to force it into one or the other, and it can't decide. Okay, and it's a purely random event here, purely random outcome. Okay, a kind of a randomness that's much more fundamental than the randomness in rolling a die. Okay, so those are the two things that we notice. Okay, so that's the physics of spin. Those are the experiments.